Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Drive Through HR. It is a wonderful Tuesday here in the States, I should say. I should put a caveat next to that, that not everyone has the exact same time zone as I do. But anyhow, thank you for listening to Drive Through HR. Thank you for carving out some time to listening to us and our guests talk a little bit about HR and recruiting and all that stuff. So without any further ado, we have an international. Drive Through is international. So we have an international guest on today. So Anne, how are you doing today?
Hi, William. It's great to be on the call today. And, yeah, I'm enjoying a stunning day in Auckland, New Zealand today. But, yeah, I'm probably, as you say, pretty much international, and I never quite know which city I'm going to wake up in. And, yeah, I've been here. Love my time in the U.S.
So do us a favor and introduce yourself. So tell the audience kind of your pertinence, who you are and kind of what you're up to these days.
Yeah, okay, happy to do that. So, yeah, I'm Anne Fulton, and I'm CEO of an HR tech company called Fuel 50. We're career path management, which we think is a neglected, you know, part of the talent management technology landscape. And, yeah, I've come from a background. I'm an organizational psychologist and have been in the talent management technology industry for quite some time now. So I have, as well as being an executive career coach for a number of years. So I guess I've been in the HR space for a long time and have a real passion for helping people with their career pathways. And more recently, I guess, helping organizations create great career pathways for their people is our number one passion. And yeah, I've got a fabulous team that are helping us deliver this in organizations across the world. So we're in 22 countries, and we've got hundreds of thousands of users of our software now, and a number of organisations, including a number of Fortune 500 companies that are using the software too.
It's career path is, you know, a fascinating subject here in the States. I would tell you that the number one reason that people leave jobs here in the U.S. is that bad bosses or terrible bosses. So the reason they don't leave companies as much as they leave bosses. The second, and it's a really close second right underneath that, is they don't see themselves in the company. They don't see what's next. They don't see that pathway to the promotion or the bigger car or whatever the bit might be. They don't see that. So career pathing in the States is, I don't think it's done really well. I wouldn't know anything about outside of the United States, but here in the States, it's not done that well. So how do you help a company kind of envision something that's not there? So like, I would assume that in some of the cases where you all operate, Fuel 50 operates, you walk in and they've really never given a whole lot of thought to career pathing. How do you start?
Yeah, I guess it is quite a challenge for a number of the organizations that we're talking to. So for them, it's often a blank sheet and it has been neglected. And yet, they're getting engagement surveys, which are saying that, career development is the number one driver of engagement in all the organisation. And, the exit interviews. And, the exit interviews are saying that people are leaving because of lack of career development and lack of advancement opportunities. So people are really hungry, for this information in their organisation. And I guess, that what we're having to do is to provide an antidote to LinkedIn. Because if you think about it, LinkedIn is, trying to lure away your people. So it's providing career path information, it's providing connections, and, it's providing information that people are hungry for in their own organisation. So what we're helping organisations do is create a communications mechanism for their career path proposition. So, it's the why you would join, it's the why you would stay, it's who do I need to talk to in my business, who's going to help me with my career, who's doing what looks really exciting, and who, and that I want to find out more about. So basically, Fuel 50 is supporting organizations to kind of help HR communicate what that career path proposition is in a really exciting and compelling way, because I think it's, Yeah, a lot of organisations that we're working with are trying to build competency frameworks so that they can kind of map out the competency pathway to where they're going. And yes, that's really important. But I think people are more importantly for the real stories of people that are in those roles. What do they love about what they're doing? And how can they help me? And how can I connect with them? And how can I find out more? As well as understanding what my, you know, gap is between where I am and where I want to be. So that people are effectively starting to take ownership for their own career.
So is it safe to assume that career pathing for the A players or high potentials or high performers, that's always been done? And now what we're really kind of talking about is career pathing for them as well as everyone else in the organization. So first of all, tear that apart. Do I have that right that we've done career pathing for the last 20, 30 years, but we've really focused in on a smaller group of people? Now it's time to open the aperture and really focus on a much larger group of people. Do I have that in my brain right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I still think that the career pathing piece can be done better for talent, but yes, organizations have been paying attention to, you know, the succession plans and, you know, succession risks for their A people, their talent and their high potentials. But what our global benchmarking research showed us was that organizations that are opening it up to the entire organization are getting significant business benefit. So that's where they take, you know, the career pathing proposition to every single employee. There's a lot of business gains there, and, you know, that's even driving improved revenue per employee and overall financial profitability. So there's some real business case for investing in career pathing, you know, for your entire organization. And, you know, I guess it's the how that proposition gets to every single employee. A lot of the benefits that we're seeing for those organizations is that people can then see a pathway. There's more mobility in the organization. More people are being placed internally. So that's going to reduce your external recruitment costs. And then there is actually an engagement benefit. So we saw in our research a positive gain spiral that came from providing a career path proposition to every single employee as opposed to just talent. It was really interesting.
So I love that a second ago you talked about engagement. You tied career pathing to engagement. And first of all, I hadn't really heard that. It makes common sense, or at least lines up with common sense for me. And engagement kind of is something on a pathway to retention. So it's like career pathing is one of these things that you should do if you want to retain folks. So what questions do you get when you first interact with somebody that's just, they've never bought into it, they don't really know what it is, they don't understand kind of how it fits in their organization? Like how do you win them over?
Okay, yeah, I think that's a really good question, but I think because most HR practitioners that we're working with do understand that career development is a driver of engagement in the organisation, so a lot of them are hearing it from their people, and so they've got an identified kind of pain point around this, and that they know that they need to do something, they just don't know what, you know, what they need to do. And I guess they're, you know, they're looking for solutions. You know, so rather than just measuring engagement, you know, I think, you know, we're working on a real solution that is delivering engagement impact for employees. So, you know, there is a real strong business case for organizations to invest in career pathing. And then I guess they really want to understand how, you know, how they can achieve this. So, you know, what we often find is that we've got HR practitioners that are trying to build some of these internal career stories to motivate and engage their employees. But they're going out and trying to interview or, you know, get video interviews of employees or build competency pathways, which all of which is quite painful and arduous and time-consuming and needs resourcing. You know, so I think the fact that there's now a technology enabler that helps you collect that information, basically employees are telling their own story, just as we do on LinkedIn, but that becomes a really powerful internal communications portal for people to start to connect around career pathways and get a real line of sight. So it can be, you know, simpler than people think and more cost-effective. One of the interesting things that we're seeing is that I was just at a Workday breakfast yesterday, and they were talking about, you know, three hot roles that are emerging in HR right now. And number one on their list was career managers. So these are people that are being tasked with actually building the career proposition for that organisation and acting as talent agents for their people. So I thought that was incredibly interesting. And then the second one was hot role was employee experience managers. So again, you know, career pathway is your employee experience of an organisation. So from the minute you join to the minute you leave, you know, it's your career life cycle across that experience. So interesting to see that these two hot roles being identified by Workday, you know, are very much suggesting that career pathing is becoming, you know, hot on an HR agenda right now.
So someone once told me that career management, no one's going to manage your career. You've got to manage. You've got to be aggressive. You've got to be ambitious. You've got to take a hand in managing your own career. Now, that might have been terrible advice, but the bit was don't wait for someone else to kind of, you know, play God and manage your career. You should do that. You at least should have a hand in it. First of all, how do you respond to that?
How does that fit the
real model of career pathing in today's market?
Yeah, great question. Thank you, William. We all need to own our future. There's no question. And what we want might be quite different from what the organisation wants for us. So we do have to be in the driving seat, there's no question. But I think an organisation has a responsibility for supporting the career pathway, and people have that expectation of the organisation. And the best organisations are starting to do it really well. So I think that there are three keys to this. So yes, employee ownership, but secondly, the organisation needs to provide, you know, some great communication mechanisms and visibility to career pathways and information and resourcing to their people. So there's definitely an organisational responsibility. But we also think that leaders are pretty critical in this piece, and we see it as a triangle that of employees, leaders and the organisational enablement. So with managers, it's so important that they are supported to be able to deliver quality conversations to their people, so that if somebody does want to talk to their manager about their career path, that the person's not stumped or frightened off, you know, the fear of the career conversation where, you know, what on earth am I going to say if she wants my job or if she says she's going to leave tomorrow or next week. So, you know, supporting leaders and managers to be able to deliver those conversations is a critical piece of the equation in our view. So,
finish your thought. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that so that three-way support is critical and is very much part of the model, and what our benchmarking research has shown is absolutely critical, that you need to look across all three levels to get a good quality outcome.
So because of your background, I'm really curious as to the types of managers and leaders that you run into. You got kind of, let's just make the world simple and say there are two types of, you've got gals and guys that they invest in their team and when they want their team to go on and leave them, essentially. You know, they invest in them,
yeah.
They make them really successful, and their success for them, happiness for them is that those folks go on and do great things without them. And then, you know, that there's the other types of managers and leaders that once they've got their team in line and in order, they don't want them to ever leave. Like, that's disruption, and disruption causes some instability, and instability is bad for everybody. And so they want to not necessarily hold them down, but they want to keep them in place. And I know you run into these types of folks out there, and I know it's probably more complicated than I'm making it, but like, how do you assess for that? How do you know who's who in this business?
Yeah. Okay, no, and I think that you're right. I mean, our aspirational view is that we can have managers that are, you know, talent magnets and talent agents for their people, and we know those, you know, we know those people are out there because they're the ones that attract good quality talent. Everyone knows that you're going to get a great career experience when you're working with those managers, and probably even going to go on to greater things because of the opportunity of working with them. So those people are relatively rare. But what's more common is the manager that's focused on getting a job done, and you know that they're really focused on productivity and outcomes, and you know, doing what they're there to do, and helping their team to do that. And I think it's really important to support those managers at both levels. So, you know, we have a slightly cynical view of managers in that, you know, the best are very much at the top of their game, no question. And, you know, we can aspire to being these great talent agents for people and being inspirational and motivational leaders of people. However, for most of us, it's just about kind of trying to do the job. And so therefore, you know, we kind of focus on just lifting the game of those people so that they can do what they need to do around the career conversation just that little bit better. So that they've got, you know, like a really simple one-page kind of guide, you know, what's the top five questions that you need to ask in that, you know, that coaching moment around the career conversation that's going to help retain and motivate that person. So I'm going to get a little bit more effort from that person, a little bit more engagement, that they're going to be motivated to contribute a little bit more. And to us, you know, the key is really finding out what people love to do. You know, what's their sweet spot at work? You know, what do they actually want to do more of? And then helping them do more of that, you know, to the business benefit. So, you know, you might find that there's 10 things that an employee is required to do in any given day, and that five of them, you know, the person, the employee really loves to do. So you look at where the leverage moment is and, you know, create an opportunity for that person to contribute a little bit more. That's incredibly motivating for the employee, gives them a little bit of stretch and extension that is what's driving engagement. So at some, you know, in some ways it can be quite important, quite easy to deliver if we can unlock, you know, that, you know, the secret to engagement, which is understanding what the motivated talents are of those employees. And, yeah, at scale, it becomes about talent optimization. We've got more people doing more of what they love. So even if, you know, thinking about you, William, there's probably bits of your day or, you know, parts of your work that you really enjoy and other bits that you might have to kind of encourage yourself to get on with. And I guess it's how can people get more of those sweet moments at work?
So what's the relationship between career pathing and training and development? And I'll say from a novice's perspective, it looks like there are companies that invest in training and development, and then there are companies that don't.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems, again, from the novice perspective, it seems like if a company invests in training and development, that seems like a company that might be rich for career pathing. Now, again, tear that apart, but what do you see out there in the real world around the relationship between career pathing and training and development?
Yeah, okay, no, that's a lovely question. Because I think training and development, you know, often is about communicating, you know, or enabling the organization just to directly meet whatever business needs it has. But career pathing is the why I would want to use my company's L&D system. So as an employee, you know, if I'm thinking about my own career and where I want to go and what I want to do more of and what I want to be better at, so career pathing is really that starting point of identifying where those growth moments are needed, what competencies I need to develop to get to my aspirational role, and to get more opportunities and to contribute more to my organization. So career pathing is very much an important starting point in that development journey. So it's, you know, what do I want to do more of? What competencies do I need? And then, you know, it's my reason for then going to those L&D activities, whether they're online learning or whether it's actually a learning event or whether it's just, you know, finding myself a mentor. So I think coming back to what you were talking about before, if we can have employee-empowered learning and development, it becomes incredibly cost-effective for the organization because I'm owning my own growth, and some of that growth and development doesn't necessarily need to be classroom learning or, you know, being sent off to an expensive MBA. You know, it's more about what I can do in my current role, who do I need to talk to, who's got the skills that I want to perhaps leverage off, and building, you know, even informal mentoring relationships around that, or putting my hand up for a project opportunity or a stretch experience that's going to give me that learning opportunity. So career pathing is kind of driving multifaceted learning by empowering employees to start to own and design their own learning experiences.
You know, in the States, I've seen a lot of executives create kind of personal advisory boards, you know, a group of gals and guys mm-hmm. around them that mm-hmm. kind of help fill in the blanks. And I wonder what your take on mentors, both in a formal mentorship process or program or even informal mentor programs. Like what should HR be doing, you know, as it relates to mentors and mentorship?
Yeah, no, I really like, you know, the concept of the personal advisory board, because I think that I think organizations that invest in mentoring, you know, again, there's good business payoff for that. And, you know, it creates visibility and opportunity for employees. Some of the organizations that we're working with are supporting mentors to do a better job of the career growth and career enablement of the people that they're working with. So supporting them to deliver those better quality career coaching conversations in those moments when they're needed. So enabling mentors as career coaches as well. That would be number one. I think number two, you know, back to the individual, is that, you know, creating multiple relationships, so rather than just relying on one mentor. I mean, the reality is that there's going to be a range of people that have got the skill sets and the learning that is going to help you. So, you know, so finding and building, you know, multiple support is going to be a far, you know, more advantageous strategy. So, yeah, I think that pushing some individual ownership on that. Yeah, I think also organisations where there are formal mentoring programs, you know, it's well worth supporting those mentors to do a better job of the career coaching and development of their employees, of mentees.
So one of the things I've seen in internal mobility here in the States is, A, companies don't do a great job of it, and secondly, it seems to me that internal mobility is really a map and a wayfinding system. If you're here and you're trying to get to there, then the there part yes. is, what does it take? What degrees do you need? What projects do you need? You know, like, what does it take to get, if you want to get to this other rung or this other place, what are the attributes of that place? And it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of visibility and clarity into what does mm-hmm. it take to get to the other place. So, like, why are we so bad at internal mobility?
Yeah, and I think because there hasn't really been effective enablers for employees to be able to understand what the gaps are, whether it's a skill gap or a competency gap or an experience gap. So giving employees visibility to, you know, what those gaps are is going to help the individuals to start to be prepared for those opportunities. That's going to promote the internal mobility. So I think there's a whole piece around preparing employees to be mobile ready. And even understanding the mobility and agility desires of your talent pool or your employee pool is quite important, because you know, if neglected, it becomes a retention risk or a succession risk if you've got somebody that is really open to a location change or a role change. So getting visibility for the organisation on that piece is also really important. We're talking increasingly about the concept of talent banking, so that important for the organisation to get the opportunity to get visibility around what skills and competencies and capabilities exist across my entire talent pool, and equally for employees to be able to search that same kind of directory and get an understanding about where they're sitting and what their own personal gaps might be, and then and start to drive their own minimization of those gap areas.
So probably like yourself, I get asked a lot of career advice. And so my normal shtick there is I tell people, I'm like, all right, plan a weekend, go off, go away, away from your family, away from your friends, just by yourself, a tablet, no electronics. and create two documents. One's a passion inventory, and the other's a competency inventory. So what are your passions? You know, get it right down to two passions, get it right down to the 100 competencies, down to one or two real competencies, and find the intersection points of passion and competence. And if you find the intersection points of passion and competence, passion is something that's just, it's there. Competency can be built and learned and taught and all that other stuff. So find the intersection points. So first of all, that's a very simplistic model, and you know that. What would you add to that model?
I really love that. So, I mean, you talk our language, William, without question. So definitely passion, definitely competency. I think to that model, we would add value. So what are your most important values and what are your career values, which we talk about as being your top priorities in your workplace? So, and again, looking at the intersection of those pieces of values, talents and passion is going to be, you know, your sweet spot at work. The reality is that, you know, that's going to morph a little bit over time, is that what's important to you at 22 might be quite different to what's important to you at 42. So taking, you know, regular stock is so important to, you know, to see about, you know, what's changed for you and what might need to change, you know, in the year ahead. So, and with values, I mean, it can be anything like, you know, the values alignment with my organisation. It can be the kind of teamwork that's important to me. It's all those kind of contextual things that are really important to our work satisfaction. So, you know, teamwork, it might be my business reputation. It might be, an opportunity to deliver results. It's identifying what those top success criteria factors are for you and then looking at, you know, how that's been delivered in your current role and owning the gap areas, saying, what can I do to create more success or more alignment around the gap areas is what we encourage people to do.
All right, so we've got about 3 minutes
three
left.
Three pieces of paper.
like that, three pieces. So you increase the by a third. You increase the – but you know what? I love it. That's actually – that's been missing, and I appreciate that.
So powerful. Simple and powerful.
Right? Like most things in life. The about 3 minutes left in the show. What question should I have asked you?
I think I've loved your questions, William. They've been really, really great. I think you've done a great job of asking the questions. And I guess the only thought that I've got, you know, to leave you with is that, you know, 95% of people out there are looking for some micro changes in their current role. They're not looking for a macro change. They're not necessarily looking, you know, for another opportunity. They're looking for how they can increase their satisfaction at work in micro ways. So it's about using more of their talents and skills at work, you know, perhaps having a slightly more values alignment moment. And that's easier to deliver for organisations than we think. So, yeah, there's solutions out there that can support organisations to deliver, you know, really powerful career path proposition that's going to help them attract and retain, you know, those quality people that we all need.
Nice. Well, Anne, you are, Anne Fulton, are at Career Engager on Twitter. Is that correct?
That's me. That's me.
And the
absolutely.
And the company is Fuel 50, and 50 is the number 50. So fuel50.com. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So fueling engagement,
awesome.
And the 50 is passion, progression, and multiplicity for everyone.
Awesome. Well, listen, first of all, thanks for the time. I know it's a what time is it there for you? I didn't even ask.
Yeah, it's now a bit respectable 7:30 a.m. on a beautiful morning in Auckland.
Well, you know, I fell in love with rugby. I have to admit, I watched rugby every night when I was in Sydney, and I didn't understand the sport. Now I still don't understand the sport, but now I actually have a much more of a respect. So there you go.
Yeah,
I fell in love
with
rugby.
No.
You should know that. Well, listen,
no,
have a
fabulous.
Wonderful day. Have a wonderful day.
Thank
it's
you
Wednesday
so much for the opportunity, William.
No worries. Can't wait to meet you in person. And thanks to everyone for listening to Drive Through HR today. We had a wonderful show. And everyone just have a great day. And we're going to roll out to a little Cure. Thanks, Anne.
Okay. Thank you so much.